This is Angel Davis. She is the Commissioner of Administration in Louisiana. Basically, for every state has something called, that is basically a general services agency. And so not only is she the director of that, what other states might call a secretary, but also she's the budget director for the governor here. So when these budget deficits start to emerge, as one recently did here just this week, Ms. Davis here is the one who gets tasked with solving the problem. So let me just briefly introduce Commissioner Davis. In 2007, Angel Davis was selected by Governor Jindal to serve on as Commissioner of Administration and effectively budget director, which is probably a challenging time to come into that position. But she's been in state government before. She was you were the deputy commissioner in a previous administration. You also ran the Department of Recreation, Culture, Recreation, and Tourism in this state. She's also a strong advocate for e-government and the promise of technology to streamline government services, which draws from her experience as a management consultant at IBM Global Services. She's also the co-author of Emerging Issues in Government Financing, and she wrote a chapter called Meeting State Fiscal Challenges with Reform. She received her bachelor's in communications from Spring Hill College and an MBA from LSU here in Louisiana. So with that, please give a warm welcome to Commissioner Angel Davis. So, as I described, nearly every state and many, many local governments as well are in the midst of a protracted fiscal crisis. What has Louisiana been facing? Can you give us some context on just what you've seen emerge over the last few years and what's Louisiana facing on the fiscal front?
Certainly. I think Louisiana is fortunate to be in somewhat of a unique situation in terms of our fiscal challenges that we're facing. Immediately after the hurricanes, Louisiana, when we anticipated that we would see a decline in revenues as a result of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, we actually experienced a significant boon in revenues. It was a large influx of revenues that were largely associated with the recovery work that was going on in Louisiana. So we generated a lot of revenue. Our revenues went up to a record high after the storms, and now what we are seeing is our revenues are declining to a much more sustainable level. So our governor has been very emphatic that he is not interested in any taxes and will not support any tax increases whatsoever in the state of Louisiana. And this administration is very philosophically aligned with the Reason Foundation, and that we need and want a much smaller government and less government control. The size of government has grown astronomically since the influx of revenues as a result of the storms. And now what we need to do is we need to reduce the size and cost of government. We need to get back to our core critical functions that government should be providing, the most necessary and critical functions that the citizens need. And so, thank you. And so in saying that, and as Lynn alluded to, this last week our revenue estimating conference met, and we reduced our revenues for the current year. With less than 3 months left in this fiscal year, we reduced our revenues by about $319 million. And you start to hear the chatter amongst some of our legislators. You begin to hear, well, we don't have a choice, we're going to have to raise taxes. But the governor came out early and very strongly opposed to any type of tax increases. Instead, we are focused on creative and sustainable solutions that will basically look for opportunities to realign our government size to a much more smaller, cost-controlled government, and every opportunity is to privatize and outsource where it makes sense. And that's when Lynn comes into the picture. Lynn and I were able to get together pretty early on in this administration, begin to have a dialogue about the best way to pursue outsourcing and privatization, and we created within the Division of Administration an efficiency council that their sole responsibility is looking across state government, beginning first with the department that I'm responsible for, the Division of Administration, that's responsible for the budget development process, the capital construction program, and all the administrative services in state government, which include health care, health insurance, risk management, many of those functions that are not government or in you know, not more commercial in nature, shall we say. So we immediately began to put together requests for proposals to outsource some of these functions. Most recently, we've awarded a contract to outsource our risk management function. This will allow us to save $22 million over 5 years, reduce our number of employees to the tune of 80, we'll have 84 less employees, and basically outsource something that is not a true government function, that the private sector can, of course, do much better than state government can. And so that was our first, and we have recently awarded that contract. I guess we awarded about three or four weeks ago. The second thing that we're in the process of doing is outsourcing our health insurance program. Again, we have built this empire of employees called the Office of Group Benefits that are responsible for health insurance for over 135,000 state employees. And I'll get to reducing the number of state employees in a minute because we're focused on that too. So we have this organization who is duplicating what basically the private sector does and has created this large insurance company that the government's running, which, in our opinion, doesn't make a whole lot of sense if the private sector can do it at a lower cost and provide a better service for our employees. So we're in the process of doing that. Right now we have the preliminary bids. We've awarded a large chunk of our business to a local company, Blue Cross Blue Shield, here in Louisiana, our local Louisiana Blue Cross Blue Shield. And then we're in the process of awarding the rest of the business. We're going through the valuation process at this point. Another thing that we've been focused on is looking at potentially privatizing our building maintenance in state government. Yes, state government owns a lot of buildings. I can't undo that at this point. We certainly are exploring creative alternatives for potentially outsourcing some of the buildings that we own in state government. But what I can do immediately is look at outsourcing the maintenance of the buildings. And so we do have an RFP on the street and are in the process of evaluating those proposals and do anticipate significant savings if we're successful in getting a proposer who can do the business at a lower cost than we can do. So those are just a couple of things that we're working on. I didn't want to get into the fleet because I think you're probably going to ask me about that a little bit later. So we'll talk about the fleet when you're ready to talk about it.
Let's talk about the fleet. Okay. So just to tee this up, you'll be able to give some perspective on sort of where the state of Louisiana stands stood in proportion to the, you know, vehicles per state employee. State vehicles per state employee is one way to measure that sort of thing. But as you look out there, one of the, I hate to use the term low-hanging fruit, but in terms of some of those opportunities that you might want to immediately look at, is the ownership of a vehicle fleet. Does it make sense for government to own its own vehicles? And then, you know, beyond that, it's not just owning the vehicle, it's maintaining the vehicle, the oil changes, et cetera, which obviously are commercial functions because we all do that at Jiffy Lube and other places. But then also just you have the issue of all the vehicles have to go somewhere and they have to sit somewhere when they're not being used. And so you have land that is being used by the state to hold lots of vehicles. And so when we're talking about the vehicle fleet, you know, some people might think that's down in the weeds, but it's actually a big cost activity within government. And so please tell us the experience that you guys have had and what you've done.
All I've got to say is Louisiana is really proud to own their vehicles because when we took office, we had over 12,000 vehicles that the state owned. To put that into context, it's more than McDonald's, it's more than Sprint, and it's more than Johnson & Johnson. These are national companies, and I'm talking about a Louisiana government owning over 12,700 vehicles, which the cost of that is astronomical because we have a vehicle maintenance program. We have our risk management that we have to, our risk insurance. We have, of course, the cost to store the vehicles. But let me just tell you, when you start taking away vehicles from state employees, particularly wildlife enforcement agents, they carry guns. it's not an easy thing. So the first thing I did is I put a moratorium on the purchase of all new vehicles. In the meantime, Lynn and my efficiency council worked together to develop a request for proposals for an enterprise pool, carpool, where we could provide a rental service at our state offices for our state employees at a lower cost than what we are charging now to reimburse people for their travel per mile. So we were able to successfully award that contract. Better rates than you can get, I can assure you, right now, because of our large number of users we have in state government. But when you talk about taking away cars from people, I have to tell you, I have had to call cabinet members, call elected officials, call higher education, and basically say, I'm coming to get your cars. I mean, just give me your keys. And I think the biggest challenge was really the wildlife enforcement agents, because, you know, they're a whole breed of themselves. You know, they're like part of law enforcement, and they carry guns, and they have to have the cars that use the most gas, you know, because they tend to frequent off-road sites. So it was just a big challenge. But we worked it out. We have actually reduced our vehicle acquisition, with the exception of direct public safety and correctional services. We have a moratorium all across state government on vehicles. We have reduced our purchasing by half since we came into office. We are now in the process. We have the rental contract that's set up that is much more cost-effective than either owning or us reimbursing employees for the use of their own personal vehicles. And what I've also done is I put a limitation on the use of personal vehicles in excess of 99 miles, because I can rent a compact car for $32 a day when it cost me 54 cents per mile to reimburse people for their travel. So great progress in that area. Our goal is to reduce our fleet by 10% per year. And again, with the exception where it doesn't make business sense, which is, of course, public safety and correctional services, to basically get out of the business, the car business, for our state.
And you've had an auction. You've already started auctioning
them
off.
We've been auctioning off cars right and left. So if you're interested, I think it's like the first Saturday of the month down in Baton Rouge. And my dad called me, and he was like, what's this about these cars that you've got for sale? I was like, Dad, you don't need any more cars. But, So, been very successful. We have raised a lot of money that is basically one-time money, so we put those dollars back into one-time investments in state government.
Well, let's shift gears for just a second and talk about the level of state employees. Is the number of state employees in Louisiana today the same as it was when you came into office?
We've reduced the number of state employees by 6,000 as a result of this latest budget that we put in place. The second day, Governor General was, or was it the first day? The Governor General was in office. I had been working for free. Actually, I was working for my other department, but they loaned me for after the governor announced my appointment. And we were prepared for the first day that we took office. We had an executive order to freeze state hiring. We had an executive order to provide for more accountability and transparency in state government. And we had an executive order to provide for more ethics in state government. So right off the bat, we were ready to really change the way that government operates by improving not only our ethics in state government, but our government expenditures, our hiring in state government, and to make sure that we had more transparency and accountability in state government. The number of employees when we took office again, as I have to say, the budget and the number of employees were at a record high. Most of this was as a result of how large our budget grew. By $10 billion since the hurricanes, our budget experienced a great influx of revenues that were basically poured back into state government, whether or not it was for critical services. It was for whatever state government wanted to do at the time. And so we systematically began reducing the number of state employees, first by the executive order hiring freeze, and then we began to implement a new budgeting process that we led, in conjunction with my cabinet colleagues. And the budgeting process was changed to focus on most of you who are familiar with state government will know the budgeting process in most state governments is completely broken and it's backwards. And you would never run or develop a budget in the private sector like state government does. What state government does is basically they have this budget, and they, you know, if revenues are good, they just add money to the budget. And if revenues are bad, they take a little money away from the budget, and they kind of spread the cuts all across state government with no evaluation of the outcomes that a state needs to achieve or wants to achieve for its citizens. But it's just basically, let's take a little here, take a little there, which results in, when you're cutting budgets, mediocrity across state government. You're basically thinning the soup. You know, you're not looking at the outcomes that you, or the priorities that you want to achieve, and the best way to achieve those outcomes by investing strategically. And so we implemented a new budgeting process called outcomes-based budgeting, which we took all the cabinet members through and their fiscal folks through extensive training. I think we had 3 days worth of training. And the whole purpose of that was to wipe away the existing budget that we had and start with a very competitive process where cabinet members actually had to compete for the limited general funds that were available by submitting proposals for the types of government services that we felt were most important. So the cabinet first outlined, based on the governor's platform, the outcomes that we wanted to achieve during our term in office. And those outcomes, of course, were improved healthcare outcomes, improved educational outcomes, improved public safety, all the normal things that government would want to achieve. And we said, okay, give me your best plan to achieve those outcomes, and I'll tell you whether or not we'll fund those outcomes. And so that resulted in creativity, competition, getting rid of the status quo, getting rid of the dead weight in state government, getting rid of those programs that may have been added 30 years ago for some reason or another that were no longer necessary or critical, particularly when we were facing a fiscal challenge, the fiscal challenges that we were facing. And we actually put together a budget that was full of policy reforms that were focused on funding programs that actually could achieve outcome based on evidence-based research, had achieved outcomes, and we got rid of programs in certain places where we knew that they were not effective or weren't achieving the outcomes that we wanted. And so that's basically how we started. We ended up, through the budgeting process, reducing 3,000 state employees that are no longer state employees, and getting rid of and eliminating certain programs and duplicative functions in state government. And then this recent budget that the legislature is currently deliberating gets rid of another 3,000 state employees. Reforms, particularly in the area of healthcare and social services, we are some of the, those are the two areas of reform that I'm most proud of, because healthcare, we know in Louisiana that our healthcare outcomes are the lowest in the world. I mean, we're you know, we are behind every other state. We're doing it the old way. We're not focusing on improving our healthcare indicators. Instead, we just keep putting money into programs that obviously aren't working. We have some of the same difficulties in the area of education, although we've seen a whole lot of improvement in education over the recent years. So with our healthcare policy changes in this executive budget, we are actually looking at the area of institutionalized care, moving those institutionalized patients back into the community where they can become more independent, where it makes sense, and better aligning the types of healthcare services that those patients actually need. Instead of giving them a Cadillac, in certain cases they may only need a Camry. I don't know if that's a good example.
Oh. Instead Rayla of Hood would not
Cadillac,
say that's a good example.
Exactly. So in any ways, what we have done in the past is we have basically not used evidence-based research. We haven't properly aligned our expenditures with our outcomes, and that's why we've been so far behind many other states in the area of healthcare. And so by changing the budget process, that has greatly driven our reduction in certain state programs and in state employees. And so we are 6,000 less state employees now, numerous programs. And we're also thinking about a new way of providing government services instead of the traditional way of providing government services, a way in which government can be more effective and only provide those critical services that are needed for the citizens.
Well, and just to add one point to that on the outcome-based budgeting approach, Reason Foundation has a new study out. For those of you who haven't seen it yet, we had David Osborne, who's a national guru and pioneered this approach to budgeting, which, you know, really is, you know, for anyone in the private sector, it's sort of common sense. You fund the things that work, and, you know, you don't fund the things that don't work or demonstrate measurable results. But that's, you know, unfortunately, an innovation in government. And so David Osborne is, I know, a mentor of yours in particular, and we have a new study on that's called The Next California Budget, where we asked David to write a piece for us applying that approach to California, which has had a few fiscal problems the last few years. I just want to switch gears for a minute. I know we're going to be, and then open it up to some questions. At the same time that you've been doing all of this work on streamlining and privatization and you know, the budgeting transformation, you've also been leading the charge for greater transparency and accountability in government. Could you talk a little bit about your initiatives on that front?
I can. And a lot of this, I've really used the Department of Culture, Recreation, and Tourism, which is a department that I ran under the existing lieutenant governor, who's now the mayor-elect of New Orleans. And what I did with that department is I implemented the new budgeting process. I implemented a transparent scorecard for effectiveness. And it really became very, and working closely with David Osborne, I had invited him down to Louisiana to spend some time with me to try to help me implement some of his teachings and his approaches to government budgeting. And, you know, he has lots of experience across lots of experience with local government as well as with many state governments. And so I kind of modeled everything on a smaller scale within the Department of Culture, Recreation, and Tourism. And once that was done successfully, when I had the pleasure to serve as commissioner for Governor Jindal, I said, well, you know what, let's see if we can actually, I had been pestering the former commissioner of administration to let me do this outcome-based budgeting or for him to do it statewide. And he was like, no, you know, that's just a little bit, you know, that's a little bit crazy. Let's not do that right now. We like our budgeting process that we have. And so I guess after three or four meetings with him, David and I kind of gave up on him. And then when I was appointed to the position, David was probably, you know, one of the first phone calls I made because I'm like, wow, this is an opportunity to do this statewide. I don't have anybody telling me that I can't do it. And so that's exactly what we did. And with that comes transparency. And that was one of the first executive orders that I told you that the governor signed was transparency and accountability in government administration. And we had set up a smaller version of a transparency website in CRT. And so I was like, great, now I have this whole IT staff that's available to me statewide. Let's see how much I can do, you know, with the rest of the state. And so we developed LATRAC, which is our website that covers all reports, all state expenditures throughout state government. And it's there transparent. And as you know, when there's more transparency, there's more accountability. And when there's more accountability, there's better performance in state government. So now I like to say that we have over 4 million citizen auditors who now have access to look at all of state government spending. And LATRAC it's a great website, and it's very easy to use for the citizens. And all you do is you go online, and you can pick a department, you can pick an agency, or you can do a search of any state contract, which is very powerful, particularly when there's some state contracts that we probably shouldn't have had, and we have canceled some state contracts as a result of the accountability that LATRAC shows for government spending. And I'd like to recognize Dr. Stephen Procopio, who's my Director of Research and Accountability, who's with us here this morning. Stephen really... Yeah, I tasked him with doing this, and of course, all of my assignments that I give are a little aggressive to say, or challenging to say the least, because I always want it done yesterday. And so we were able to get it up and running, I guess, in about a couple of months, right, Stephen? So shortly after the governor had signed his executive order, we had the website up, and we were demonstrating it for the press so that we engaged those 4 million. Citizen auditors that we have in Louisiana, and it's where it's been very, very successful.
Can you just offer some perspective on what the reality of implementing reform in government. I mean, you're there at the top. You're implementing it. You're doing it. Can you offer some lessons learned, some insights that you've gleaned from that experience? Just more of the, you know, general global perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a really, really good question. We've been very effective, and I think one of the reasons that we've been very effective is leadership comes from the top. And our governor, Governor Jindal, is not interested in the status quo. He's not interested in big government. He's not interested in government doing the things that government's been doing for the last 30 years. He's interested in really impacting and improving the lives of our citizens. And so he's a tough taskmaster, but when leadership comes from the top and he selects a cabinet that, like I have not ever seen a cabinet as impressive as the cabinet that he has put together. The people that he has pulled together, just a brief anecdote. I worked for Governor Foster, great governor, and he put together a wonderful cabinet, but you still saw a little bit of state government kind of protecting their own silos. You saw wildlife and fisheries, they're like, okay, this is my business, and I'm going to do my business, you do your business, and I'm not really interested in collaborating with DNR, Department of Natural Resources. You saw Department of Health and Hospitals, this is my silo, don't mess with my silo. DSS, I know we serve the same client or have an overlap of clients that we serve that are similar client base, but I'm not interested in working with you to get together and consolidate and streamline the way that we provide our services to those citizens. But now you have those department heads. They don't really care about their individual silos. They just care about what's in the best interest of the citizens and how to more effectively provide those services to the citizens at a lower cost to the citizens. And so you see Department of Social Services working with Department of Health and Hospitals to create a streamlined, one-stop approach to those citizens that they serve. You see Department of Natural Resources working with wildlife and fisheries to streamline and lower the cost of government by getting rid of duplication. You see that just in the division of administration, I had a training program and then civil service had a training program. We each had our own training programs. Well, to the angst of my employees, I got rid of our training program and said, civil service, you do it. You're already doing it and you can do it cheaper. And so I guess, you know, the beauty is, or to answer your question, it's in leadership. It's in leadership and it's embracing fundamental philosophical policies, policy reforms that the governor wants to see happen, working together to do that, and then never, ever forget to ask your employees, no matter what level they are, how they would like to contribute or what they would like to see different in state government. And the power of that is that they become partners with the massive reforms that you've got to get accomplished in a short amount of time.